The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The federal emergencies that they could declare, because then the laws go out the window and it's whatever they say you have to do. And this time around, it is a federal public health emergency declaration on abortion. They want to declare, through Javier Becerra at HHS, an abortion public health emergency that would free up resources, that would mean your taxpayer dollars, to help people access abortions.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Arg. Right? Arg. That's all I can say regarding that. Arg, arg, arg. I want to talk about it. Tomorrow, in fact, if not later today, we'll see what happens. You know, our bishops. And, you know, God bless our bishops. They take a lot of heat, right? A lot of lady has a problem with this or with that problem. U.S. bishops are urging Congress to pass no taxpayer funding for abortion act. I'll tell you about that maybe tomorrow in greater detail, but I think it's great. I don't want a penny of mine. You don't want a penny of your money going to kill children, do you? Damaging women? In fact, you know what I'll do today? I received an email from a listener. I'm going to keep her name anonymous, of course, who had three abortions. She says, I had an abortion 3 or so years ago out of wedlock, and she's really struggling right now with it because she made the mistake, but she has this overwhelming fear that God's going to punish her for that. Right? He can't forgive her. She wants to have a baby. She's afraid she's not going to be able to have a baby. I want to address that coming up. I want to talk a little bit about that, but that's what happens when the government reaches into your pocket and they take out your money and they fund this damage. It's as simple as it is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and they'll whitewash it with something. That's exactly what it is. The Biden administration, they actually announced yesterday they're going to be, of course, ending COVID, the COVID health emergency, which it was, can you believe it was declared nearly 3 years ago in May? It's crazy. But I looked at my calendar and I thought, how long have we been in COVID, right? And I went back and I saw the official declaration was in May. I feel like it was longer than that, but still, you're talking 3 years, right? Nearly 3 years. Politico reported that the announcement came in response to the to two House Republican measures aimed at immediately ending the emergencies, and they're going to end it on May 11th. It's going to allow time to unwind all the other programs that were set into place when the emergency was first declared in 2020. But this administration loves the COVID pandemic. They love the license that it gives them. Take a look at the spending that has been done all under the guise of this pandemic. But the announcement, the fact that they're going to end it, it caught a lot of people off guard because it's going to impact how it handles, for example, Title 42, that's the program first used by the Trump administration to decrease illegal immigration. So what then, right? Right now, the courts ruled against Biden being able to drop the program. Additionally, the whole student loan forgiveness program, a lot of people are hoping to get their loans forgiven, right? I know a lot of people are. I don't think it's necessarily fair, but I understand if you're on the other side of that scale, you're like, oh my gosh, what a blessing that would be, right? What's going to happen there? You know, this whole student loan forgiveness program is based, you know, upon the COVID public health emergency. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm not quite sure how that's all going to shake out, but there'll be a lot to talk about in the days ahead. But while the COVID public health emergency is going away, the Biden administration is considering declaring another one over abortion. You heard some audio there. And Planned Parenthood and their ilk, of course, they're loving this. They are loving this. Of course, their allies in the Democratic Party believe this is a full-scale reproductive health crisis that's going on. Really? Really? Yeah, and again, I'm going to just step back. Let's get outside the world of politics and the insanity of the intellectual blindness that goes into this, the rationality, the irrationality, really, to justify this. Again, I'll go back and I'll say this 1,000 times because I believe it. At the very heart of this is something very spiritual. And when Roe fell, Satan lost power. He lost power. I had saw a stat, and again, forgive me because I was going to pull it off the top of my head. There was a dramatic drop in abortion since 1990, right? And when the collapse of Roe, those numbers are going to be even more precipitous. So Satan has a bloodlust. He hates you and he hates your family. He hates children. And that's what we're seeing. So we'll see what goes on here with this Biden administration. I never saw a more pro-death administration than this one. It's to me, it's terrible. I know a lot of people disagree. They don't like when I talk about this. Don't talk politics. I'm not talking politics. I'm talking reality and truth. I'm talking to you about the greatest civil rights issue of our day, and that's the rights of the unborn. Those fellow citizens who don't have a voice, who are vulnerable, who have an inalienable right to life, to liberty, and to the pursuit of happiness, and it's being robbed from them by this administration. You know, the HHS Secretary Xavier Becerra, he told Axios, he said this, and I want to quote him, quote, "There are certain criteria that you look for to be able to declare a public health emergency. That's typically done by scientists and those that are professionals in those fields who will tell us whether we're in a state of emergency. And based on that, I have the ability to make a declaration." Of course, that's just nuts. There's no such crisis going on right now. A public health emergency? Right? Over what? A full-scale reproductive health crisis in our country? These guys are crazy. They're nuts. They're absolutely crazy. And you know what? We reap what we sow. If you voted and you put people like that in office, this is the fruit of what we planted. This is it. You know, we have the power to change things. I think we got to do a little bit of reparation on our part, too. I think we need to pray, and I think we need to fast, and I think we need to ask God for his mercy. I think he, you know, hold back his hand of justice on this country. You know, the Students for Life, great group out there. They've been on the program in the past. They pointed out pregnancy is not an illness. When has pregnancy become an illness? How many people call this radio program and they call me and they say, "Drew, praying for fertility. I'm praying for." In fact, that woman who had the abortion, she's afraid she won't be able to get pregnant, right? That's her fear. It's not right. It's not justified. But pregnancy is not an illness. And abortion is not a cure. All right, enough of that, okay? I'll step off that soapbox, but I'm sorry. Just got me pumped up when I see this irrationality. I say to my wife all the time when I'm watching the news, I shouldn't be watching this. It's not good for my health, right? It's just not good for my mental health to watch this type of stuff. It's just, and you know what the reprieve is? Do you know what the antidote is that I have? You know, my ability to stay rational and sane? It's this microphone. The fact that I could come here and hang out with you and vent and share with you, at least hopefully articulate a little bit of truth and rationality, right? At least there's a counter voice out there piercing the din, the cacophony of misinformation that's out there. Now, Governor Glenn Youngkin of Virginia is recessing the Commonwealth's participation in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which would copy California's energy policies almost verbatim and apply it to the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic regions. This is another bit of insanity, right? Dominion Energy, Virginia's largest electricity supplier, says it would cost ratepayers between $1 and $1.2 billion just over the next few years. So Youngkin's going to try to pull his state out of the compact. Meanwhile, in Minnesota, the Gopher State is they're doing just the opposite. The state legislature is taking up what's been called the blackout bill. It's, you know, by its opponents, which would adopt California's policies to one of the coldest states in the union. It would force the state to get out of get all of its power from carbon-free sources by 2040. One of the coldest states in the union, right? Really? We'll see how that flies, right? Florida. Let's talk about them, and then I'm going to change gears. We'll talk to my buddy Chris Temple, who's going to be stopping by. Florida is one of those states right now that is aggressively seeking to protect children from, you know, the vile fantasies of the transgender lobby. One law they passed actually prohibits Medicaid from paying for medical procedures to aid a child transitioning from one sex to another, and the American Academy of Pediatrics sued the state in federal court, and the state's asking for documents. A judge ordered the AAP to provide the state with documents showing that they're supporting sex changes for kids. Those documents should prove pretty interesting. In fact, I hope you'll stay with me throughout the show. As always, I try to give you a look at life that you're not going to find anywhere else. A little bit later in the broadcast today, Wesley Smith is going to stop by. And here's something I've been tracking. To me, it's absolute. It's derangement. And again, I want to be charitable because I know we all have loved ones, right? And you may have somebody who struggles with gender fluidity or identity or things along those lines. I want to be charitable. But I just want to show you where this type of rationale leads. If I, as a man, think I can cut off my reproductive organs and become a woman, then where's the limit for somebody else who says, I want to poke my eyes out because I identify as being blind? Right? Oh, Drew, that's extreme. That's extreme. You think so? There's a movement right now called transableism. And you know, I think more people than we know maybe have this. They struggle with this. In fact, I was reading an article about a 78-year-old man who told his wife he lives with this secret for 60 years. So it might be more common. Something new to me. But, you know, there are cases of people who want to have their legs amputated so that, because they identify as being disabled. One man actually dropped some really heavy equipment on his leg and went to try to get it amputated. The doctors saved the leg, right? So, look, whether it's somebody's reproductive organs, whether it's their legs, whether it's their eyes, you know, it's an issue that's becoming far more common today. There's a great disorientation in the culture today. Wesley Smith will be by. We're going to take a look at the rise of transableism that's coming. Oh, why not be trans age? Instead of being 55 years old, you could be 35 years old, right? Maybe transracial, right? You identify as an African-American, get reparations, right? Why not? Why not? You know, I'm going to move to San Fran and get that $5 million payout that they want to give to everyone who's black in that state for reparations. I identify as black. I mean, this is how can you say no to somebody? How can you do that? I mean, look. I'm going off the rails today. I don't know why I'm pumped up. I'm gonna take a pause. I'm gonna change gears. We'll talk about this a little bit later. As I said, Wesley Smith will be by. We're gonna take a look at everything from, you know, how you can help your family plan for their inheritance to defunding the police. It's a mixed bag here in today's show, as always. So we'll get into that and a whole lot more. There's one other story I'm following here, and I want to talk to Chris about this one. And it is cryptocurrency. You know, we talked about that a lot. You saw Bitcoin fall. Ever since Bitcoin was developed, all kinds of cryptocurrencies have sprung up. I've got a friend who buys crypto, and he buys it really low. He buys, like, really cheap crypto because he's hoping. He says, look, I can buy this stuff. It's really a gamble because if for some reason it takes off, I could have hundreds of thousands of dollars. I knew a young kid who was in his early 20s, and he went out and he bought a $400,000 house. And I said to my daughter, who was a friend of hers, and I said to her, I said, how did he get that house? He's 22 years old. Oh, he bought Bitcoin. So he bought Bitcoin very early on, and you know, it went from a couple thousand dollars up to over $60,000. So people were looking at it. A lot of governments have actually even invested in it. The main reason it was made was to actually initially circumvent government currencies. So if you could use a currency that the government couldn't track, and you see this on the dark web, you see this with cartels, you see this with drugs, you see this, a lot of stuff that goes on that you don't want tracked. It's a great thing if you want to use it for nefarious purposes. That was the initial design. And for a while, that was true. But right now, that's no longer the case. Now governments and others are getting into this big time. Right now, no government has any control over cryptocurrencies. And no one should expect that the government will allow that situation to last for long. There's a group out there. Their acronym is BRICS, B-R-I-C-S. Stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, which have announced plans to create a new gold-backed digital currency as competition to the U.S. dollar. This concerns me. I've been very concerned about the future of the greenback, very concerned about the dollar. So look who's in the mix, right? Russia, China. You also have India and South Africa, Brazil. They want an alternative currency. They want a new gold-backed digital currency. It's not going to be the U.S. dollar anymore. They're not alone. U.S. Federal Reserve announced recently that they're looking into a digital currency, but without gold backing. So there's also the possibility of a South American-wide currency union. But of course, after the collapse of these cryptocurrencies, some other nations that are looking at it are now pumping the brakes a little bit. Even the UK is beginning to have his doubts. So what does the future look like, right? What's the future look like? Let's talk about that. If you're on hold, I know several people have called in to join me on some of the other issues. We can go ahead and take your calls in a minute or two, potentially. But let me welcome Chris Temple. He is the editor and the publisher of the National Investor. Great, great publication. Check him out, nationalinvestor.com. That's the website. And I get an email from him, and he's got his finger on the pulse of what's happening. Chris, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. How are you?
Great. It has been too long. I said to my wife, I told her you were on my show today. She goes, gosh, when was the last time he was on? I said, I think the last time Chris and I talked, was it dinner when you were in town? Or have I had you on since then?
Well, no, I've been on sporadically since then, and we're looking forward to seeing you when we're up this summer, too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. You got to come in studio, though, with us here, all right, and hang out. It'll be great. Let's talk crypto, Chris. Yep. FTX, right? Big news. Cryptocurrency exchange collapsed after its founder was, found playing fast and loose with a lot of other people's money. What has that done? What's the ripple effect of that, and has that cast a bad light on all of crypto? Where are we right now with crypto?
Well, I think I was talking with you or one of your pinch hitters. I forget when we were talking about this a couple or 3 months back, but that was really a boon, I think, to the federal government, because they wanted to see somebody who would so malign cryptocurrencies and these exchanges and so forth and take some of the steam out of it. And this whole story has done that. But that said, your introduction a few minutes ago, there is a movement afoot almost everywhere else in the world to try and break away from the dollar's hegemony, which it has had over the world pretty much since the end of the Second World War.
Yeah.
No currency has come along and lasted forever. We replaced the British pound. And before that, you go back a few centuries and you had the Dutch currency, the Spanish currency, the Portuguese currency. Going back almost to the Middle Ages, you had one would be king of the hill, and for some reason they would be replaced. I've been telling people for a long time that one of the big macro themes facing our world today, Drew, is the end of globalization as we've known it since the end of the Second World War. And by extension, that means the end of dollar hegemony. Is the dollar going to go into the ash heap of history tomorrow? No, regrettably in some ways. But no, it's not. We're going to see a lot of competition. And, there was just that big meeting of the South American countries that you alluded to. And there is a movement down there, an organization, whose acronym is CELAC. It's kind of the Organization of American States Without U.S. Influence. And a lot of these countries in South America have been under the thumb of the West and the U.S. particularly for a long time. They want to get out from under that. They want to forge their own destiny, and they think one way to do it is to have their own currency union. So the dollar is still king of the hill. In fact, in the last couple of years, its share of foreign exchange reserves globally ticked up a little bit again after having declined for about 20 years. But the handwriting is on the wall. We'll stay king of the hill in our hemisphere, but South America is going to be a minor challenge. The euro is going to plod along. The big thing is there going to be a successful long-term currency anchored in China or not? That's going to be something to watch.
Well, I'm sure China and Russia and North Korea and a lot of other countries don't like us. Would love to see some alternative currency as well. I mean, we take a look at sanctions and everything else. I mean, if there was a way around this, I'm sure our enemies would appreciate it. Do countries feel they need to get into the Crypto Act? And how safe is it?
Crypto to me, Drew, is a sideshow. That might be one of a few mechanisms of a currency, but these new currency unions that are being discussed or new currencies being discussed, it doesn't have to be just cryptocurrencies. They can have their own quasi-central bank like we do with the Fed or like the ECB does or the Bank of Japan does. So that might be one of the mechanics to have a digital one. But whether these things sink or swim is not going to have anything to do with whether they're digital or not, or in part. It's going to have to do with whether they're politically and economically accepted. And over a long time, they will be. We're not going to see, this is not likely to be a sudden thing.
Right.
you know, notwithstanding a lot of really dopey stuff out there. You know, one guy saying we're going to lose our bank accounts in the U.S. and we're going to have Biden bucks, he calls them, you know, some trackable digital currency. I mean, don't walk away from that guy. Run.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about that, though. Let me pick up on that point, though, because I doubt it'll be Biden bucks, but privacy is an issue. If a country did develop a digital dollar of some sort, people start to use it. How private would your transactions be? I'm assuming every transaction you have made would be able to be tracked by the government. If the government's the one providing that digital currency, it just seems that they'd be able to see everything that's going on, you know, just like your bank account can with, you know, the check you're using or what kind of transactions you make.
You just answered the question. They can all be tracked now. The only thing that isn't tracked now are purely cash transactions. Cash won't ever be outlawed because then you'll get, among other things, the CIA out of the international arms and drugs businesses. But aside from that, what do we all do every day? I mean, and this is where I think some of this stuff, again, has been hyped up beyond what reality is, Drew.
Yeah.
You and I right now, we can use Venmo, we can use PayPal, we can use our debit card and instantaneously transfer money to anybody we want, and usually free of charge.
Yep.
So what you know, how does a digital currency or cryptocurrency add to that? I would encourage people to Google what the Minneapolis Fed president, Neel Kashkari, said in an interview last summer about whether the Fed should get into this. He said it's redundant, it's unnecessary, it would invade people's privacy. Mm-hmm. And I, for one, do not believe, as bad off as we are in many ways in this country and as things have gone downhill, I don't think the American people are ready to accept a China-like social currency.
No.
Where if you say the wrong thing on social media, your debit card doesn't work. Kind of thing. I think that that's that's an exaggeration of what we're going to have in the end.
Yeah, I hope America is the very last place on the planet that ever goes down this social credit scoring pathway and programming. That would be horrible. We are the land of the free, right? At least we should be. And I'm with you. You know, I look at my own transactions. In fact, sometimes I get frustrated. I might be visiting another church. They're passing the basket. I don't have money to throw in because everything I do is digital. If it's not on my credit card, right? If it's not on my ATM, if I'm not Square cashing or Venmoing my kids or using Apple Pay, right? I have no cash, you know, and it's tough. And everything is trackable now. So to your point, I think that's the case. I just hope the U.S. is a player in this, that we remain a world leader. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, you know, you're talking about teaming up to make a currency. They seem like an odd, you know, combination. I mean, Russia, China, okay. But to explain Brazil and India and South Africa,
Brazil. All right. Well,
why that combination of countries?
They are all emerging market nations that arguably, in various ways, should be farther along in their own development, in their own bringing of their populations into the middle class, et cetera. And they believe that part of the reason that they have been laggards is because they have all been servants to the U.S. dollar. You know, at times like the recent past, when the dollar until recently, when it's corrected, was on quite a tear and was the strongest currency in the world, this actually stifles the growth, the income generating ability, and the ability to pay debts of a lot of these emerging market nations. So that's one aspect, is that the dollar to them is a straitjacket.
Yeah.
The other one, and this is how we really need to look, Drew, in my opinion, at this evolving discussion. It's going to continue to evolve over how the currency mix in the world is going to change. It's going to increasingly involve resources and who controls those resources. The U.S. has at least indirectly controlled the majority of the world's resources for a long time, because we're on a global dollar standard. And these countries want to break away from that. They want to be able to call their own shots. Why do you think Saudi Arabia now wants in on this whole BRICS consortium? That's a huge geopolitical development, where they can see plainly, part of it is the fault of the present administration, but it didn't start with them. They see how history is moving along, and that the U.S. is not going to go off into the night and be nothing.
Right.
You know, for our lifetimes, the U.S. dollar is still going to have the biggest representation in the global mix. But it's not going to be king of the hill as much as it was. We're going to potentially, I think, see a multipolar world. You're going to have, depending on what part of the world you're in and what you're trading, you may be able to trade in two or three currencies. It's not automatically going to be the dollar anymore. And there's some very serious repercussions for us as Americans as that develops, because if we can no longer compel the rest of the world to use our currency and to underwrite it, our living standards as a country will go down.
Oof. How far off do you see that?
I don't know if you or I, honestly, Drew, are going to live to see it. It's going to be a very slow evolution. It's not going to happen again. I don't believe it's going to happen abruptly.
All right, that's great.
Look, the euro, over 20 years ago, you may remember some of this.
Yep.
What were all the evangelical Protestant dispensationalists saying? Oh, here it is. The Antichrist is going to show up any minute.
Yep.
The rapture is going to come because we got the revived Roman Empire. That's the euro.
Yep.
The euro is a basket case. That continent is broke. China, for as many years now as the yuan has been around, they're hardly a rounding error still in global foreign exchange balances. That's going to change. I don't think Europe's going to come back and be a major force. China probably will be. But again, it's going to be a slow evolution.
Well, Chris, I know a great source to get people plugged into is nationalinvestor.com. What will they find there? How do they tap into your expertise?
Well, I'll tell you, I always like to remind folks of our motto: you can get information anywhere, here you get knowledge. And if you go to nationalinvestor.com, you'll see a variety of things I've written recently about what's going on in the world economy. It's stagflation, all this different kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, see what you think, folks.
You see a recession coming?
In fits and starts. You know, several of the Fed's regional banks have already, for the last couple or 3 months, showed a contraction in industrial activity and economic activity. Retail sales are kind of staggered. But at the same time, you look at the travel industry, when people have been pent up for 2+ years over COVID, airline business is booming, gasoline sales booming, the hotel industry booming. So it's going to be a mixed bag, but I think the general trend is going to be that we're going to grind downward somewhat, but still be better off than Europe and a lot of the rest of the world.
Hey, Chris, thank you for being here. Really great to have you.
Anytime.
Nationalinvestor.com. Go check it out, okay? Tap into, I like the way you said that, knowledge. You can get information anywhere. Get real knowledge right there. Nationalinvestor.com. That's Chris Temple. It's bottom of the hour. I need to take a very short pause. I'll be back on the other side. Stay with me.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Get connected.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Lift off. Yeah, lift off. I like that. I was just watching an Elon Musk documentary the other day on SpaceX. Fascinating stuff. Future's crazy. I listened to Chris Temple there talking about digital currencies. That's coming, right? That will be the future at one point in time. We're going to send people back to, they're talking about sending the first woman to the moon. That's coming up soon. The technological advances we're going to make are just off the charts. It's going to be amazing what our kids and maybe their kids are ultimately going to see. So we'll see what happens. Also, I just can't wait till we're done all these first. It's always about gender and color and race, and can't wait till everything's done and we don't have to say this person's the first black to do this or the first, woman to do that or the first transgender. Let's leave those things out. Does it matter? Maybe it does. I don't know. I get frustrated when I hear about those things. Like, there was a big headline today about the NFL's Super Bowl game. First time in NFL history, two black quarterbacks are going to go against each other in the game. That's great. I'm all about first, but who cares, right? I don't care what their ethnicity is. I could care less. So what a good game. That's what I want. I want a good game. Hey, I want to fill you in on something else that's happening here. Just a quick update in education, because the future is your children. You hear about the kids are our future. I have no doubt about it. I think the problem in our culture today is a crisis in virtue. It's without question the problem. I feel bad for, you know, for the cost it caused parents to get a Catholic education. There was a really interesting twist. The Archdiocese of Oklahoma City and the Diocese of Tulsa, they're jointly applying to the state of Oklahoma to open what would be the first Catholic charter school in the country. And charter schools, of course, if you're not familiar with them, they're public schools, but they operate on a completely different basis than, you know, any than the typical public school, with a curriculum that usually follows a more classical approach. And the Sooner State Diocese, they're hoping that recent Supreme Court rulings have opened the door, you know, wide enough to allow for more public funding of private education, though there are those, you know, rightly warning of government entanglement. And I'm afraid I kind of am in that camp, too. I mean, you better put up some good guardrails. But if it goes through, it's going to take a completely different approach to Catholic education than we've seen in this country. So there's no word on what the school's curriculum would offer, but it would more than likely be a more classical approach. I think that's important. I do. I think that'd be great. Something that we've been seeing happening in Catholic schools across the country. I don't know if you're familiar with Chesterton Academy. Started as a private and independent Catholic school in the Twin Cities and has a very strong classical education focus. It has since added numerous schools now across the country. I'm trying to think of the places that they're now in. Twin Hearts Academies have a similar program, and they likewise opened up other schools. There are schools in the state of Illinois, in the Chicago area, a lot of different places, right? And those schools are influencing, they're starting to have an influence on parish life, parish schools, typical diocesan and parish schools. For instance, some high schools have added a classical track to their curriculum, while Chesterton has a parallel program in its schools. But the whole point, and I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, the whole point of Catholic education is supposed to be teaching who Jesus Christ is and who we are as his disciples. Right? That's what it's all about. It's to form the next generation, to instill in them good values, not to tell them what to think, but to teach them how to think critically, right? We're better off as a result of that. I'm joined today by Elizabeth Sullivan. She's Executive Director of the Institute for Catholic Liberal Education, which you can find at catholicliberaleducation.org. You're thinking, liberal? That's not a bad word. And we'll explain that. Good to have you with me, Elizabeth. Good afternoon.
Thank you for having me on the show, Drew.
Do you get that reaction from people when they hear the word liberal?
Constantly, but we take it as an opportunity to reclaim the original intent of that
Amen.
Word. In the classical sense, liberal comes from the Latin word liber, which means free.
Yep.
And I think it's the crisis of our time to understand what authentic freedom really is. That's the freedom to choose the good, to follow a path to holiness and sainthood, rather than just license to do whatever we wish.
I think it's so well said and so true. I was struck by some of the research that I was doing here, and I found that there's more interest in classical education than I actually thought. I knew of a few institutions that were going down that pathway, but as I began to dive into this a little bit, I was kind of surprised. What's going on? I mean, that was, you know, education prior to the mid-20th century when we had this a little bit more of a classical education. Things changed. Are we seeing things change again? And why do we need to reemphasize this classical method? What are educators seeing as a value in it?
Well, when you look back at the history of education, Drew, you see that this classical tradition is rooted in the ancients. Now, this is before the incarnation, and it was characterized by the desire to cultivate wisdom and virtue, understanding that is about human flourishing and true happiness. And there was a spirit of inquiry and a use of the seven liberal arts. But after the incarnation, after the coming of Christ, the church takes up that tradition and orders it toward Christ. And then it becomes part of the Catholic intellectual tradition, which is the unity of faith and reason. So progressive education really has a short and shaky history, about 100 years. So this tradition formed human beings for centuries. Before the state-controlled education, the Catholic Church really developed education, and it was the gold standards for centuries. So the last 100 years have been an aberration, and I think more parents, more educators, more More bishops and superintendents are understanding that the riches of the Catholic intellectual tradition are simply unparalleled. So what we're seeing in Catholic schools is a return to our own tradition. The classical school movement is a very positive thing. It's a richer, deeper formation, but it's incomplete without Christ as a logos.
Amen to that. How is the renewal going? How is the renewal of Catholic education going right now? Are Catholic elementary and high schools, are they getting better?
Yes. It's a very hopeful time for Catholic education, and we want to spread the good news because it feels like the solution to the decline in Catholic education has been hiding in plain sight all along. It's our own tradition. As I say, it's unparalleled. So that's how do we reunite faith and reason from a child's earliest years? That's when the sacramental and the moral imagination is formed in a child. A Catholic worldview to see not just the pragmatic and utilitarian ends of secular education, but to look at all things through the eyes of the Creator, to see the imprint on the Creator, of the Creator in everything, and to see ourselves in the story of salvation history that happens when you're young, and we don't want to miss that window, that opportunity. And when we see schools embracing this, many teachers, I myself included, was not educated in this way, but it's very accessible because it's deeply human.
Yeah, my guest today, if you want to join us, Elizabeth Sullivan, the number here, share your own experience, your own view. Maybe you're an educator, maybe you're a parent and you're concerned about what kids are now being taught in schools. I said to my wife, Elizabeth, a little bit earlier today, gosh, I'm so glad we're not raising kids anymore. I mean, it's such a challenge on so many different things. You know, the Surgeon General's come out and said kids shouldn't be exposed to social media until at least they're 16. 13 would probably be the base, but that's even young, in my opinion. You take a look at what kids are being exposed to in grade schools. I mean, we had this bill in Florida that protected parents' rights, and the world called it the Don't Say Gay Bill. I mean, you take a look at how parents are being challenged on so many different levels. We need these good areas of academia. Our number here, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I only have Elizabeth Sullivan for a few moments today. So if you want to get in, good time to join us. I want to talk about the cost of a good Catholic education, because that's a problem for a lot of people. A lot of people say, I'd love to send my kid to one of these types of schools, but I can't afford it, you know, and I've got to send him to public school. I do my best at home, but they're being exposed to, you know, the educational agenda that the school currently has, and there's not a whole lot I can do. I maybe send them to Catholic education, you know, at home, or maybe they try to impart it, but the cost of it's so expensive. How do parents counter that, and what should be done? I mean, how do we bring the cost down so a good classical education is available?
It's heartbreaking to think of the parents who want this formation for their children and can't provide it. I think it's the obligation of the whole church to find ways to support the entire church, because this is about the salvation of each human soul and about the future of the church and the way the church, the body of Christ, serves the entire culture and community. So certainly Catholic education partners and other voices for school, the Catholic voice for education choice, that's very important. The charters that you mentioned earlier, there is concern about the tentacles of the state in when the money flows to the school itself. Having the dollars flow to individual students and families makes a lot of sense because it ensures more freedom. But we'll see how that goes. But it is the obligation of the whole church to make this beautiful formation available to the young, especially in this aggressively secular culture.
Yeah, no different. Well, I'm assuming Catholic schools consistently school better on standardized tests. I'm a big believer in what you're doing. I think it's going to make for a better country. I was reading an article earlier today, and the call really was for teachers to come out and see this as not just a noble profession, but a really important one as well. And I wish we could pay those teachers even more, because we need to form our children properly, you know, if we want a brighter future. I think growing up in today's culture is even more challenging than it was maybe when you grew up or when I grew up. I mean, the threats that now face them really are quite unprecedented. Just final thoughts, maybe a little bit on this issue here. I mean, how do we get those parents, those teachers to come in And how do we change the culture? Is the sand shifting right now? I'm assuming maybe it is for the better.
Yes. What we are seeing is that a lot of faith-filled people, either those who want to change careers or young people who are on fire for their faith, are drawn to teaching in these very mission-driven schools. Yeah. And the way we do this is we need to invest in people, because teachers can't give what they don't have. So a Catholic, the call to Catholic education, to teach in a Catholic school or Catholic homeschool, is really a noble calling, and these teachers need to be fed spiritually and intellectually on an ongoing basis to be communities of worshipers and learners together, because they need to pass that kind of passion for learning and wisdom and truth onto their students. So our institute has seen this problem, because most teacher training right now is fundamentally secular, rooted in a very pragmatic and utilitarian philosophy. So we have built an alternative certification, an alternative credential program for Catholic educators that is now spreading nationally, and we're very excited about it.
Let me grab a call or two for you quickly. I don't have a whole lot of time. Joanna in Highland, New York, you are on the air with Elizabeth Sullivan. Good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment, basically, that we pulled our three boys out of school 3 years ago to homeschool them, because we didn't like what the schools were pushing, and we also weren't sure of what our Catholic schools were actually teaching in our area, and we wanted a fully Catholic curriculum and classical curriculum, and so we decided that I would teach them at home. And we're really happy we did, because the public schools are crazy in what they're pushing now, even in the ones in our local area, and I never thought I would see it. I'm really glad to hear that there's going to be Catholic schools that teach authentically Catholic things.
Yeah, I agree with you, Joanna. Thank you for that call, and you wonder how much crazier things can actually get. Elizabeth, if people want more information on what you're doing and maybe how they can expose their kids to this classical education, what's the best place to go?
Our website is replete with resources and articles. We have a book, we have case studies, and you can find all of that at www.catholicliberaleducation.org. We have a number of teacher formation programs. We do introductory webinars for priests and religious. We just had one this past week.
Wonderful.
It very much resonates with pastors and religious, because they have this deep philosophical and theological formation that most of the laity lack, and it resonates with them, and they're very much joining the bandwagon. And we exist to simply help them support their efforts to support this evangelizing mission, because we think that these people deserve a rich and deep formation that immerses them in their own Catholic intellectual tradition.
Well, keep up your good work. I mean that. We need you. I'm so grateful for everything you're doing there. That's Elizabeth Sullivan, Executive Director of the Institute for Catholic Liberal Education. Her website, CatholicLiberalEducation.org. And she points out it's replete with just wonderful resources. Check it out. It's about 12 minutes before the top of the hour. And you take just a very short pause. I'll be back with more. Stay with me.
The hope lives here. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, this September, I'm heading the Relevant Radio's Eucharistic Revival Pilgrimage to Italy with Nativity Pilgrimage. This is available to you. Information available at relevantradio.com/Italy.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's good to be here with you. Hey, I want to share an email I received from a listener. We will pray that chaplet coming up in just a minute, about 10 minutes from now. So if you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. I want you to pray for this woman, and I'm going to keep her name anonymous. I'm sure she's listening. She knows who she is. Educated woman. She said she had an abortion. This was probably 3 or so years ago. She says, Drew, I was out of wedlock, but with a lot of prayer, I met and I married my husband last October in the church. And we want babies as soon as possible. We've been trying now for a couple months, But I have a nagging scare that God may withhold a child to punish me. Now, I know he's merciful. I just can't shake the fear. I can't. And I just want to pray that we can have a baby this month. Well, two things, Tracy. Three things. All right. The first thing, if you're stressed out, right, and you're concerned, a lot of times women who go through that find difficulty in getting pregnant. I don't know why. When you finally relax, you turn it over to God, all of a sudden, whoa, things are there. I can't tell you how many women I know were stressed out that they couldn't get pregnant and only exacerbated their problem. The second thing here, point two, your time, God's time's not your time. I know you want a baby this month or maybe even next month and right away. God's got the perfect time for you. He's got the perfect time for you. So just be open to life. It's a gift. And if God so chooses to give it to you, and he is all merciful, he will. And then three, final point, you got to forgive yourself. Okay. I really want to speak to anybody who has made a mistake in their life. Maybe you cheated on your spouse. Maybe you've had an abortion or multiples. Maybe you encouraged your girlfriend or wife to do that. Maybe you've done something that you know is dark. You know, I want you to know God loves you. I think you need to hear this because the mistake did not change your purpose. You were created for a mission, right? God calls us to be merciful, right, to others. But you got to be merciful to yourself as well. You got to forgive yourself. That's the hardest person to forgive. I've made mistakes in my life, and I think back. I know God's forgiven me. I know his mercy is great, but you think about them. I still sometimes say, Lord, I'm really sorry about that. You got to forgive yourself. You know, don't let failures and the times you got off course, don't let that run against you. We all make mistakes. You know, everyone makes a mistake. And we do things we shouldn't. It's easy to go around, you know, feeling bad, living guilty, you know. I think it can cause you to struggle more because guilt will drain you emotionally. It's going to wear you out. When you're guilty, you create chains that hold you back from fulfilling your purpose in life. You know, you get stuck. And you know what? That's the work of the enemy. He knows you. He knows how guilt, and guilt's such a powerful thing, isn't it? It can keep you from your destiny. Don't spend another minute weighing yourself down and living in regret. I want you to know God's forgiven you. If you're Catholic, I encourage you to get to the sacrament of reconciliation and know that God will meet you there and he will forgive you. If you're not Catholic, ask God for his mercy and then forgive yourself. God's not pushing you down. When you make a mistake, God's not holding it against you, right? Think about Jonah, right? He messed up, right? He could have blamed God for his problems. You know, he didn't, though. He was faithful to God. I think about Satan, too, in this whole thing. Boy, he wants to really rob you of your hope, doesn't he? He's going to tell you, God doesn't want to bless you. You screwed up. You know what? You don't deserve that baby. God's not going to give you a baby. Why should you? He gave you one, and you killed it, right? I mean, this is the whisper of the evil one. You'll never accomplish your dreams. You'll never find that right husband. You'll never be anything. Yeah. Christ paid the price for your mistakes, right? He paid the price for your sin. You just got to turn to the Lord and accept his mercy because you were created to live guilt-free. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing. Don't let the evil one tell you that. You know, the accuser will try to lie to you, tell you you're washed up, that you have no future. But I'm telling you, life's too short to hold that type of mentality. You might have made mistakes. God's telling you you're forgiven. You are forgiven. He forgives you. So forgive yourself. Okay, stop beating yourself up. Stop reliving your failures. Stop dwelling on those disappointments. Stop going from, you know, mistake to mistake. Shake it all off. It's a new day. It's time to say goodbye. You know, Romans 8, it says there's no condemnation for those that are in Christ, you know, who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. And stand on Scripture. Faustina was told by the Lord, the greater the sinner, the greater the right you have to his mercy. The Lord told her, he says, my mercy is confirmed in every work of my hands. You were created in the palm of his hands, right? He who trusts in my mercy, the Lord told St. Faustina, will not perish. He who trusts in my mercy will not perish. You know what I love about that? Maybe you got people coming against you right now. Maybe there's difficulties. Maybe you're having trouble with your affairs. The Lord says, he who trusts in my mercy will not perish. He says, for all of his affairs are mine, and his enemies will be shattered at the base of my footstool. That's Diary Entry 723, a powerful promise by the Lord. So I think God's greatest happiness is when somebody who makes a mistake, who sins, who fails him, repents, right? Who turns back and says, Lord, forgive me. I made a mistake. You know, you were made in the image of God. You were made in his image. So trust in it. Trust in the man who made you, who loves you more than anybody else. You know, St. Faustina said, the greater the sinner, the greater the right that you have to my mercy. And I think about the story of Mary Magdalene, right? Or even the tax collector, Zacchaeus, right? Who robbed people, made money. Did God hold that against him? He says, no, come down from that tree. Let's go have dinner. I want to talk to you. He dined with prostitutes. Saul, who enslaved, chained, and murdered, killed Christians, became one of the greatest evangelists of the New Testament. St. Mary of Egypt, St. Augustine. Look at all of these people who lived wretched lives, yet met God's mercy, and who became a great and left an indelible mark on the church. And then do yourself a favor. Look in the mirror and look back at yourself and know that you're walking in those same footsteps, that God's mercy is greater than your sin, and that he loves you, and that you have a great destiny.